Hi all, this is Sarah, and the episode you're about to listen to is the first of three in a row that are inspired by the incredibly fun time we had at Beta Mates Live in Brooklyn at the William Vail Hotel in March. We were so excited to see so many of you alongside our friends, Nikki Payne, Kate Claiborne, and Lauren Billings of Christina Lauren for what was an incredibly fun time filled with raucous laughter and really fun conversation. If you get a chance, go look at the pictures of the crowd that are in show notes this week. We are so, so thrilled that we got to spend time with all of you. But we want to make sure that we also say thank you to the authors and publishers who sent books and goodies for nearly every attendee of the podcast. We did not expect such an incredible outpouring from authors and publishers. And thanks to all of these people, almost every person in the room walked away with a book, a romance novel, and that's honestly all we want out of these events. So we want to thank Avon Books, Blue Box Press, Grand Central Forever, Gallery Books, and Penguin Random House for their incredible generosity. And also, we want to thank Lauren Blakely, LJ Evans, Pippa Grant, Anna Huang, Parker Huntington and LJ Shen, L. Kennedy, Avery Maxwell, Ava Miles, Max Monroe, Catherine Nolan, Amory Nilix, Megan Quinn, Piper Rain, P. Rain, Stephanie Rose, Lucy Score, and T.L. Swan for being so great and sending books to attendees. It was such an incredible treat to be there with all of you and such an incredible thing that those publishers and authors did to make sure that everybody got to celebrate romance that night by taking something home. We also want to thank the Rip Bodice for being on site. And I think that's it. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
You know, it is a beautiful day out there. And we are recording in between a New York earthquake and a Midwestern eclipse.
Yeah, we are. We're getting it too, but I think we're not getting the full one. Are you getting full darkness?
No, we get like 95% though. We're pretty close to the path. And
do you have a pair of glasses?
Listen how cute this is. The entire middle school, they have acquired these items for the entire middle school. Amazing. And we're all going to go out into the park and look up at, you know,
watch out for those middle school boys. Don't let them be stupid.
Sarah, this is my entire career. I got you. But I'm excited. I'm excited about it. And it's supposed to be sunny.
Well,
so that's nice.
You love a moon situation.
Hello.
Jen.
I'm very excited. This is very on brand for me.
So this is your,
my mom lives in Cleveland, which is in the path of totality. And I thought about going home, but it's Monday and it's not really. I'm like, it's 5 minutes. I can see 95% and have a similar experience. Mm-hmm. But I did find myself thinking as I was watching the women's Final Four last night, which is also in Cleveland, if all those people who are like, let's go to Cleveland for these basketball games are smart enough to stick around an extra day and watch a total eclipse.
Did you see the article, though, about hotel room prices? It's like $900 to stay in a Motel 6 in the path of totality.
I'm sure that it is, of course.
Listen, my friend Sophie Jordan, your friend too, Sophie Jordan, everyone's friend Sophie Jordan, her parents live in Texas in the path of totality, and she drove home to like be at their house for this, and she was like, and of course the weather is like cloudy and rainy, that's what they're predicting. And I was like, well, it'll still get dark. I don't know, will it get dark? I've never experienced an eclipse.
Yeah, it's gonna be
fine. Weird.
Is everybody the dog in gonna Cleveland freak out? Maybe. Although you said it slept through the earthquake, so maybe, you know, Kahlo's just like, what the earth?
He like got off the bed, walked into the hallway, and then turned around and went back to bed.
Eric, my brother Eric, has recently moved back to Cleveland, and he has a really sweet rooftop deck on his apartment, on his townhouse or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, are you having an eclipse party? Hello, you're. But he probably will be at work and we'll just go to the Indians game.
Because well, it's not called the Indians day, anymore,
the Guardians.
Too.
It's in the middle of the day.
2 o'clock. We got an email from, listen, the New York City public schools have been really working overtime this week because we had an earthquake yesterday. And which you all, anybody who's on the internet knows that, you know, New York earthquake Twitter just became...
Had a good time.
We had a great time. And people, like, listen, I did see one person who was like, New York's is a group of survivors. We've done Hurricane Sandy and blizzards and 9/11 and now an earthquake. And it was unironic. And I was like, sir.
Come on now.
My coffee remained very still on the table at the coffee shop where I was.
Right. So. Right.
But anyway, New York earthquake Twitter, very exciting. Everybody's excited about a New York earthquake.
So anyway, it's big, big time, big events. Although by the time this all happens, you know, if this did portend the end of the world, you're never going to hear this. So sorry, everybody.
Do you know what did happen to me yesterday, though, Jen? That was very exciting. I was in this coffee shop. There was an earthquake. And then, like, I continued to write with my friend for several hours because it was not really a thing. And then Greta Gerwig walked in.
That's very cool.
And I was like... why are you here? You have taken a wrong turn. This is not for people who are cool like you.
Where's Barbie Land?
Nope. It was like 2 blocks from my kid's school and Greta Gerwig walked in.
I'm impressed that you recognized her. I don't think I would have.
Oh, I recognized her. And she came in with her husband, who is also like a known person. And when I came home and
Wait, who's she married to?
Noah Baumbach, who is also a filmmaker in his own right and wrote
a book, right?
He wrote Barbie with her. And she and I said to Eric, I came home and I was like, oh, Eric, Greta Gerwig came in to the coffee shop where I was. And I was like, and she was there, you know, with the husband. And he goes, he doesn't even rate a name.
And I was like,
no, why? Why should I care about that man? I mean, to be honest, I didn't even like, I continued to write and pretended like I didn't recognize her because it's New York City.
I mean, obviously, that's what you have to do. There's
and there I was there. Without a copy of any of my books to give her.
Damn it. Just casually like drop one as you walk by.
Oops. Do you like romance novels? Mm. Anyway. You know, sometimes you see people, well, when you live in a city, often you see people
and you're like,
and you do the thing where you're like pretty sure you know them from like work.
Yeah.
You're like, I think that guy just lives in my neighborhood. And then you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Joan Cusack
is a famous Chicagoan.
Well, the Cusacks are, they are people. Who else? John Mulaney is a Chicagoan, but I think he lives here in New York. Vince Vaughn, doesn't he live in Chicago?
Listen to this. Apparently, who is the 40-year-old virgin, which is on topic for
Steve
talking
Carell
about this later. Apparently, he owns a house up in the North Shore, and my coworker Wayne was like, Steve Carell was driving behind me this morning on Lakeshore Drive, and I was like, what?
How would you? Well, first of all, Wayne, eyes on the road.
They were stuck in traffic, so he had a chance to look around, I guess. Yeah.
Sure enough.
Anyway. But that was funny.
So anyway, that's
well,
it.
Listen, Love everyone. Sightings. Welcome to Faded Mates, where we tell you about the times we saw famous people and didn't talk to them. We are too cool for that.
But also, like, don't talk to famous people in the world. Just, it's fine. Just let them be people.
Yes. They're out there enjoying their day just like you.
Here's what I will tell you, living in New York City and knowing, like, you see famous people on the street, and when you meet their eyes, you're like, you have the moment of like, oh my God, that person's famous. Mm-hmm. And they mm-hmm. have the moment of thinking, oh my God,
that person recognized me. Yeah, for sure.
So then, like, literally the best thing you could do is just be like cool about it. Just a smile and a pass you by. Anyway, I'm Sarah McLean. I read romance novels and I write them.
And I'm Jennifer Prokop, a romance reader and editor. And the reason I made the who's the 40-year-old version relevant to this week's episode is because I want to talk about this week's episode, which is, okay, you've all heard us admit and say, and we're sad to report.
I don't have we said it on this podcast?
I think we might have said it last week, but maybe we didn't. Okay, maybe we didn't. Maybe this is new news.
We're not going to make a big thing about it, but.
The files from Fate of Mates Live were corrupted, and there is no recording. Sad.
Which is very sad. They were all
My
there.
My husband just walked by, and this is new news to him. He walked by, and he's like, wait, what? He's
frozen. I know. He can't listen to it either.
I know. Isn't that sad? I know. He said, oh, ma'am, you can come over and say in the mic if you want to. He just... He's no, like, no, he's I'm done like, now. No. I do not want to appear on your crazy podcast.
He is also famous and does not want you to acknowledge him.
Yes. Mr. Reed's romance was... Anyway, it is a bummer.
It's a real bummer, everyone. Yeah. Eric's very upset about it. But, like, sometimes things happen.
Of course, it happens. This is honestly very cute. And the also, Discord, like, we announced
it the live more exclusive.
And a lot of people were like, well, I was jealous I couldn't go, and now I just don't ever have to think about it again. And then lots of people were like, oh, I'm sure Eric's so upset. Tell him not to worry, and he does so many great things. And I was like, I will tell him in 5 months when he is over it, or in 5 minutes when he edits this. Fine. But it's very cute.
He's really upset about it because they were all there. Like, he checked all the files, and then when we got home, they were gone.
They're gone. And you know what? Listen,
things happen. So. It happens, and we move forward because the legend of Fate of Mates Live 24 will live in infamy. Right. People will. And so what we're going to do, Jen.
Yes.
Is.
I thought this was a good idea.
Yeah. Tell you guys a little bit about, like, what went on in Fate of Mates Live. And also, instead of there being one episode related to Fate of Mates Live, now there will be three. At least.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
We might just keep going.
Sure. So then one of the things that we did at Fate of Mates Live was we had three guests, right? Nikki Payne, Kate Claiborne, and Lauren Billings from Christina Lauren. And we asked each of them, like, on stage, and they did not know why we were asking them this. Like, essentially, like, what is an interstitial that you wish we would do or that you would want to do with us? And we didn't know the answers. Like, we were just asking them.
We didn't ask them ahead of time. We just asked them to come prepared for that
one. Yeah. I told them they would have to come prepared, but not to tell me the answers. And then, like, on the fly, we gave them some recommendations.
We did an interstitial, like a quick one, which was very fun because it was literally, like, off the top of our head. Like, this is a book we love.
What's going to come out?
Which was really fun and also a fun party trick.
Yeah, our only party trick, honestly. it was really fun. And so what we're going to do is the next three interstitials we do are going to be the actual interstitials that were recommended by our guests. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start out this week with the one from Lauren, which is she asked us to essentially do an interstitial that is like exceptions to the rule. And what she meant by that is, like, we all have really, well, okay, I and most other people, but me especially, have really strong, like, I love this, I don't like this, right? And so what she wanted to know was, like, what's something you don't like, but then is an exception to that, right? Mm. So, like, you don't like Secret Baby, so tell us about a great Secret Baby book. Or, you know, like, there's these reading rules you have for yourself. I'm not going to really do that. And, like, what are the exceptions to it? And I think that's a really fun question. Mm-hmm. And so that we decided would be the first one we'll do today. And we'll even, like, talk a little bit, I think, if we can remember about, like, what we did that night. And then we can, like, add more details.
I think so. I think this is great. The other thing I think that's fun about this is that you and I largely have very differing.
Yes.
Not for
what
us.
We don't like. Yeah. Not for Jen. Not for Sarah. Right?
Not for Sarah. We did one thing that you all did miss is we did sort of talk about not for Kate's at the live. And there are some great photographs of Kate Claiborne's not for Kate face.
Oh, you guys, we had a photographer there, and she took awesome photos of the audience. And one thing I've been thinking a lot about, and Kate said it to me first, and I keep thinking about it, is so Fate of Mates Live, the actual event, was probably like 98% women, wouldn't you say? Or women identifying more, right? And there's 300 people there. And Kate said something really interesting, which is, and, like, it was just, like, joy the whole night. People really laughing, big belly laughs, right? Like, laughing so hard. They were, like, bent over in half. And it's just not that often that, like, women in huge groups get to do that.
And right? feel just, very, like, free.
Yes. With right. Doing like, you it. Don't have to, like, put your hand over your mouth and laugh, right? And I just keep the photographs really tell that story. And I just had a great time.
We will put some of the pictures up this week with this episode. We'll put them in show notes. And maybe I'll drop a few on Instagram so everybody can see. But also we are still going through. We have like hundreds of photographs of the audience. And I'm still going through all of them because I'm on deadline. But ultimately the plan is for there to be like a page on the website where like you can like – go through the pictures yourself and see. But there was a lot of joy in that room. And Eric always says, like, he feels after Fate of Means Live, he's always like, I feel like I am incredibly lucky because I get to like be the dude in the corner who like can like see. I have like access to this thing that like no one else gets. And I think like, yeah, I think there is something incredible. What I have said to him many times is like, I think it is so special in part because I think women often don't get access to that either, like at that scope.
Yeah, right. And I think that, you know, it's really interesting because we in our first like post Zoom after Fate of Mates Live, Eric said that. Like Eric said something like, I was watching the audience, like I could tell what a great time people were having. And seeing the photographs made me understand why he said that. Like, I knew we had a great time, but there was something really powerful about
these different.
Photos.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, my whole thing about this is like, as you know, at the end of Fate of Mates Live, everybody's always like, how'd it go? Like, did you have a great time? And I'm always like, I don't know. Did people enjoy it? Right? Like, and it's not me being coy and like needing people to reinforce it. It's literally like, do people have a good time? Like, I worry that people didn't have a good time. But looking at these pictures, it's like, listen, these ladies had a great time. So did we. It was really fun to hang out with our friends. And it's always fun to have people. I mean, like, you guys will post pictures of Nikki. Nikki rolled in wearing a full sequin jumpsuit. It was incredible. She looked incredible. And we'll talk more about like the great Nikki moments of the show when we do Nikki's interstitial, which is terrific. But Lauren was so great to have Lauren there. There were so many Lauren fans in the room. I think people were just so excited to spend time with her and to like hear her talk.
Yeah. And she was kind of in like the way we had set it up, like she was going third. Like we almost had like a little mini interview with each person. And I really thought of her as like our ringer because I really knew that like Lauren knew like Lauren knew the job. Like Lauren knew what she was there to do and she did it.
Everybody right? who listens knows that not for like what's not for Kate, but my joke in the evening was like, what is not for Kate is almost definitely for Lauren. So like, yes. We had some questions for the audience. We always like put questions to the audience. And one of the questions we asked, and we didn't either or, and it was like, you know, simultaneous or consecutive, you choose the context.
And it was so funny. And Lauren was like, I will embrace this question fully. And Kate was like, wait, what are we talking about here? And we're all just like,
you choose the context,
it's not for you.
Kate.
This week's episode of Fated Mates is sponsored by Pippa Grant, author of Until It Was Love, a Complicated Situationship Rom-Com.
Sarah, let me tell you about Goldie Collins. She is pretty awesome. She's super mad at her brother for being so bossy and nosy about her love life that she is kind of has a great idea, which is maybe she should go out on a revenge date with the smoking hot new teammate he has on his rugby team.
Yes, I think she should. Good idea, Goldie.
He is an international rugby legend with thunder thighs, intriguing tattoos, a booty of steel.
Oh, boy.
And
say no more.
They have some sort of like bad juju in their past. So what is going to happen when he has picked her is to be the woman that he wants to date? We have a man with a purse dog, a mustache catastrophe, and a tiny little fainting spell.
I am in it to win it already.
Yeah, I'm going to read this right away. So listen, here's the deal on this. If you are already a Pippa Grant fan, and we know a lot of you are, and you've read Until It Was Love, you can actually check out the hardcover edition, which was published last week.
It's so cute.
And that hardcover edition includes author notes, annotations, exclusive bonus scenes, and this adorable cover.
It is like a great cover.
It is a great cover. So go check that out. You can get this book in print, ebook, audiobook, like I said, paperback and hardcover, and with your monthly subscription to Kindle Unlimited. If your podcasting app supports it, you can click on the chapter title right now to be taken to purchase the book. And thanks to Pippa Grant for sending books to Fata Mates Live and also for sponsoring this week's episode. So anyway, it was great having Lauren, and her interstitial topic was, like you said, exceptions to the rule. Do you want to go first? I feel like you have a lot of rules. So,
well, that's true. And I remember really explicitly the one that I talked about that night, which is, well, I talked about virgin heroes because I don't like that. I'm not interested in virginity really for anybody, but specifically for men, to be honest. Because I just am like, listen, I teach men enough. I don't really need to teach men more things. And also secret baby. But let me do virgin heroes first. So that is not a trope I enjoy. And often when people are like, oh, it has a virgin hero, I will just like not read it. Like even if people love the book otherwise, an example is that one Kristen Callahan book that you really like.
I love that book.
And I'm just like, no, thanks. That's going to annoy me. So I haven't read it. But the two that immediately came to mind were actually from IAD. And maybe I was then thinking like later, like, are they a little different if they're like immortals? You know what I mean? Who knows?
Wait, point of order. Are you going to do your exceptions to the rule and then I can also talk about those exceptions?
Yeah, yeah, of
about
course.
My picks? Because then I will talk like about the game plan by Kristen Callahan, which is
what yeah, and then we'll just, yeah, we're just going to
okay.
do whatever we're doing.
Sure, sure.
Okay, so the two that I then talked about were Malcolm from Demon in the Dark and is it Conrad Roth? That baby. That
sweet baby. Conrad.
Our sweet baby Conrad from Dark Needs at Night's Edge. Is that the right
book
title?
Correct.
I think so. Okay. The Edge of the Property is
exactly,
how I always
that's
remember
how
that
I
one.
Remember it too.
And part of the reason that obviously I think they are exceptions is has to do with kind of like the reasoning why. So, and also I was just going to read all of ID no matter what. Like if this had been the first book, I probably would have been like, maybe that series is not for me. But at that point, I was like in it to win it. Malcolm has just been like alone in his little demon dimension courting water.
I know.
And right. And when Caro shows up, he's just like, this seems great. Mm-hmm. I should probably get to eating. Not kissing, eating. And you know what? I appreciate that in a man. He just was like,
he
all
knew
in
his job
from, yeah, right. He didn't know how he knew his job. He didn't even like, and so I guess in that way, like,
see, it's interesting because it seems to me like what you are drawn to is like a character who, well, first of all, we've definitely talked about this before, but like, virgin heroes have to, like, in order for them to work at all, they have to be like sex gods, like natural sex gods.
Sure. Oh, I think what it is more than that even is like, and this is a little different because with Conrad, the reason he was is he joined some like when he was still human.
Vampire cult.
Some like vampire cult where you know, stay pure to kill vampires. Sure. And then he had turned into a vampire. And I guess he just clung to the old ways of the vampire cult while being a vampire.
They can't have sex, though, vampires.
Right.
In the context. So, like, he was until they're blooded.
Yeah. So the whole thing is he's just like, I missed out. I missed that train. I think here's why. I think what I'm not interested in is sort of like us. And I say this with like love. There's nothing wrong with not having had sex. When I say I don't like virgin heroes, what I'm not interested in is like a narrative of sadness about like missing out on this or about why you have or haven't done it or girls didn't like me or like whatever it is that has caused, you know what I mean? Like caused the situation. And I think that's what I'm not interested in at all is like a poor me narrative about it. It very incel to me.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why these books work is because that's not a part of that story at all, right? Mm-hmm. For either of them, really. Conrad, maybe a little bit more. But, you know, he's angry about it and not at women.
right.
And so I think that that's kind of the reason maybe why I find it a little.
You know, I like a virgin hero a lot. And I think but I like it in a very specific way. Like, I don't like I've just never had sex and that's just that. Right. Like, I like there to be a reason. And I like for the reason to be sort of like very compelling. Like, I like it to be like Conrad's like, I was so focused on this thing that I never, or like, you know, I have written a hero who is not a virgin, but was celibate for like 12 years. And like, it was because he like sort of vowed that he would never like, you know, touch a woman because he had, you know, whatever.
Sure. Whatever.
Trauma had happened on a night when he'd been with a woman. And if only he hadn't been with her, he would have, you know, saved the day.
Sure.
You know, like, whatever. They're dumb reasons, but men are dumb. Okay. And I love their little dumb brains. And I love them to have decided that, like, in order to, like, do penance around their stupidity, like, it is sex that has to be, like, withheld.
That's a bad thing, yeah.
Pleasure is, like, taking pleasure sexually will, you know, in some way, like, you know, impact their ability to like do their own penance. Like, I love that shit. It's, I don't know,
very hardwired, right? Or yeah, Catholicism, or also potentially Bull Durham. I mean, fine.
Also, like, you can't have sex, right? Exactly.
A great scene in Bull Durham where she's like with the pitcher, who's a young, very handsome Tim Robbins, who's like, "We're not going to do it because I'm having streak of good luck, and if we fuck, it'll ruin it."
Yep.
And she's kind of like, "That's bullshit." And Kevin Costner does give a very great speech in defense of not celibacy, but like luck.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yips. if this is what caused the streak, then it is. And you know that.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
And I was like, okay,
fine. So I really do love that. And I am a sucker for it. And, you know, and I think this is deployed very successfully by some authors. Like, there is an Elizabeth Hoyt called Thief of Shadows, which is in the Maiden Lane series.
Winter
Makepeace is like is Victorian era Batman.
But, and also though, like a vicar, not really.
He runs a foundling home. Yes.
Sure.
He's very like deeply committed to like protecting the children of Seven Dials from bad people.
Sure.
Which I support. Let's protect children from bad people. But like the setup of this book is like he's also this like he's basically Batman.
Yes.
And he's like attacked and then he's like left for dead and he's rescued by Lady Isabel Beckinall, who you know, takes him into her home and like, you know, while he's masked and like helps to, I don't know, make him better. But then he disappears and then like they like come back together when he needs somebody to school him in how to like be in society. I mean, like there's a lot of Sarah McLean itch that's being scratched in this book. And he is jealous of himself. One of my very favorite tropes.
That's a good one.
Ugh, he is jealous of himself is like, cause she is like, maybe the eyes, like why are there things that are so familiar to me about Winter Makepeace? I'm also in love with, you know, it's the Superman Clark Kent thing, right?
Yes.
So he's a virgin. Kristen Callahan's The Game Plan is, I always recommend it. I don't always recommend it as a virgin hero book because for me, the real joy of this book is less the virgin hero and more the fact that I think it is one of the few long distance romances that is deployed really well. Like, Kristen really thinks very carefully. I'm the product of a long distance relationship. These two characters have a long distance relationship.
Right.
She handles it really well and really threads the needle on it in a really interesting way. And here is a little bit of a sports romance, like virginity issue. He's a football player. I can't fully remember why he's still a virgin, but I think it is like just his focus has always been the sport, similar to Bull Durham. But he also has a pierced cock. So like, who even knows? The rules are, what are the rules of virginity when it comes to a hero? There aren't any.
Well, good luck to all of you.
Here's what I will say, just because it's out, this week, is Chloe Lise's new book has a virgin hero. I wish I could remember the title of it.
I think the Olivia Dade one, the new one at First Spite, does as well.
Oh, yes. Somebody leapt into the conversation at...
Yes, and told us, yeah.
To shout at First Spite. So I think that was it. I think you're right. So yeah. I mean, I think we'll put those in. I'm looking right now for the Chloe Lise book and I can't find it. So those are, I think, probably, but just not having read either of them, but knowing both the authors, these are probably like softer virgin heroes. I don't think you're going to get like region. You're not going to get like is actually Batman or has a pierced cock in either of these. I don't think. Maybe. Let us know.
Good luck to everybody, because those are the ones I don't want. But I think one of the things that's interesting in Lauren's question, like the part of Lauren's question I think that's interesting is like why don't, kind of that's embedded is like, why doesn't it work for you, or why aren't you interested in it, right? And then like, why do the exceptions work, right? There's a reason we say that exceptions prove the rule, right? Like there's a way in which like these are, like, if here's the thing I don't like and someone can show you like, oh, no, here's a way it can work. I think it's also I guess I want to say after many, many decades of like reading romance, I think that I really believe in like sex positivity. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that sex, there's nothing wrong with people who meet and have sex for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And therefore, like virginity as a construct, regardless, to me feels like really, I'm sorry, like kind of sex negative, right? Like, or sex opposite, right? Because what you're saying is there's a state of being where not having done this is like in the Catholic Church, like pure or good.
I was
right?
gonna say, and it's,
does that make sense?
It is, yes, and
so it's really tied up in a lot of that for me too.
Yes. Yes. Because here's the thing, like there's nothing, I mean, like virginity. I think that in romance, one of the failings of romance over in modern romance, right, for the last 50 years has been virginity as prize being like kind of codified into the texts.
Yes.
Right. And here's the thing, like it's still, and I appreciate that this is like my own, like, I mean, I don't feel I need to interrogate it because I feel like I have interrogated it and I understand like this is built into my like patriarchal upbringing, right?
Sure.
Is this idea that like when a hero says she's like, when a hero hears like she's a virgin and is like, yes, like that means I get to be first, right? Like I'm Edmund Hillary. And the reality
and she's
is like
just land to be conquered.
Yeah.
Right?
And that is yuck intellectually, but like it's been built into all of us, like as like sexually not yuck, right? Like there is a sort of when you're reading that in an old school romance, you're like, oh, here we go, right?
Right.
And then like it evolved into that sort of like, then you started to sort of see books where the hero would say things like, well, I may not be your first, but I'll definitely be your last, right? Like where, you know, like the sort of sexual politics started to like evolve. And now I do think that sometimes when a writer chooses to like take on a virgin hero, they're trying, I think in some cases, they are flipping the script, right? On that, like, what is it, like, how can you play with that sort of, like, I get to be first in a gender-swapped way? Which is, you know, interesting if you can pull it off, right? But, like, gender swap does not always work quite the right way because of patriarchy and the politics of it.
Here's what I think you're right. But I think, like, this is a way in which, like, I really tried as a reader to not like sort of find like virginity as like sexy, right? Or like the whole idea of like me being first is sexy. Let me actually say it that way, right? Because like virginity is just a thing. You've done it or you haven't, right? And so I think like that's why it doesn't work for me. Like swapping it doesn't actually sometimes you swap things and you think you're interrogating something, but are you? I think is how it reads to me.
Does I think that make that's, sense? That's, I think, yeah, the thing, right? Like,
yeah.
And as a writer, sometimes you swap things and you think, like, I'm going to swap this and I'm going to say a thing. And then halfway through, you're like, you know, I know another one of yours is secret babies. I'm not wild about secret babies. I once tried to write a whole book where there was a secret baby, but it was gender swap, right? Like, he knew there was a baby and she didn't. And, like, I don't know, 100 pages in, I was like, what the fuck is happening? How, like, I can't do, like, this is not a functional book, right? Like, it can't function this way. You know, and so I think sometimes it just can't be done, but other times it's just like, it's difficult. It's a difficult needle to thread. I would also say that I think if virginity is your kink, like, I think if those Jessa Kane books are your kink, like, cause all, like, for example, in so many one-handed reads, it's like, she's never been touched. Yeah. She's like, never felt a sexual feeling before until, like, he's daddy has turned up. Right. And that's, we're setting those aside. Like, I think those are like,
those are pure kink, right? Like,
yeah,
they're not
that's
really,
like a different course of the meal.
yes, well said. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think we have to, like, belabor it, right? Like, because I think the thing about, like, exceptions to the rule that's interesting is kind of like, well, here's my read on this, and then,
well, and I know how much you like Jessa Kane, Chloe Maine, et cetera. And that's all like virginity.
Sure.
All the
but
time,
that's,
but it's different.
Yeah. But that's exactly, it's like a different part of the meal.
And
like, that's not what I'm going
it
to
is
it for,
also,
right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I actually really think, so I just recommended, you know, two, but there are a number of Virgin Hero books that I have really enjoyed. Courtney Milan has one that I really like called The Duchess War. You know, I think, and then I think there are, I think everybody kind of has, it feels like every author when they've been around for a long enough time has one. And it's interesting because in the historicals often, I think they have, those heroes often have like more of like an insane reason. Like, because historicals are basically fantasy. So you have to thread the needle differently in contemporary.
It's an interesting question is like, what don't you like about it? And then, like, what would be the workaround, right? It's sort of an interesting question. Like, why is this the thing that worked? This week's episode of Fated Mates is brought to you by Sharice Michaels, author of Say Yes to the Princess.
Okay, so this one is book one in Sharice's Hidden Royal series, which is about royal exiles who grew up secretly princes and princesses in England. And this one is about Princess Elise, who is no longer a princess, but also not a commoner. She is obscure French royalty who has been chucked from France, which is, you know, better than being guillotined, I guess. But she is now living as a house guest in the palace of the British royals, pretty trapped. Like, she can't go home. She can't really go out. Like, she doesn't have a very, like, extravagant life. And one day, she sort of gets herself, luckily, into a marketplace in London and spies somebody who she believes is her long-lost brother. And she's like, this is my ticket out. If I can find my brother, then I can, like, live a life outside of the royal palace. So she mounts this search for him. She starts asking questions that should never be asked, questions that uncover a lot of things. And the royal family has no choice but to send in Killian Cruz, the royal fixer. Now, Killian is handsome and clever and strong and smart. And he decides that the best solution here is for him to just fake seduce Elise.
Obviously.
She'll be so drawn to him that she will forget that she has this long-lost brother who she's searching for because she'll be so in love with him.
I bet it doesn't work out that way, Sarah.
Listen, you want a book where a fixer becomes the fixed?
This I do.
This one is it. The fix is in. And Killian is going to fall hard in love and not be able to do his job even one bit.
So as Sarah said, this is the first book in the series, and you want to read it now because book two is coming out in May. So you can prepare yourself by reading this one now and getting yourself all set for these Lost Royals. Okay, if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title right now to be taken to a link to buy the book. Thank you to Sharice Michaels for sponsoring this week's episode. Okay, so do you remember what you talked about that night in Exception to
Your Rule? I did. I talked about Friends to Lovers.
Oh, that's right.
Okay,
go ahead.
I mean, if it is a friends to lovers book, generally it is a not interesting book to me. And I think that the reason why I've kind of talked about this before very sort of publicly, but the reason why that is because I am not interested in people who are like genuinely like nice to each other like from the jump. And sure. That is for lots of reasons that I probably also need to interrogate. But it's basically because I feel like conflict. When I open a book, I am in a romance novel for the conflict above all, right? Like, I want to feel like at the end of this novel, these two people, the happily ever after is well earned. And in order for it to be well earned, these two characters have to triumph, or multiple characters have to triumph over some kind of challenge. And that can be external, but in many cases, like, it's the internal challenge that's most interesting to me. Like, my favorite kind of hero is a hero who's like, I cannot love, right? Like, we cannot have this relationship because I am in some way broken. I am not. Yeah. No one who has read a Sarah McLean novel will be surprised to know that my, like, ultimate kink is I am not worthy of you. I will never be worthy of you. But if we are already friends, then you're already worthy of me. It's embedded in the friendship. I think there are three of these that I really love. That I would say, like, to a person, to a book, I would recommend them, like, without question. The first is Like Lovers Do, Tracy Livesey's Like Lovers Do.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I love that one.
Which is the conflict here. It's a fake relationship between friends. She has been, she's lost her job, or she's basically like she hasn't lost her job, but she like is it, she's a doctor who is about to be promoted or like get like something. And she gets into a thing at work, and she is now like that promotion or that, you know, whatever fellowship or whatever it is on the line. And he is the kind of exiled son of a very wealthy family that has an investment in the hospital that she works at. And he's being like summoned home to a week or summoned to like a family vacation to a week on, I don't know, Martha's Vineyard or some like island for the summer. And basically he says, like, come and be my girlfriend for the weekend and you can interact with my family and like they'll love you and you'll get this like promotion. You'll sort it all out. And there's like this kind of ex-girlfriend plot where, like, you know, there are lots of different ways that these two characters who have known each other for a long time and liked each other for a long time, like, suddenly like are supporting each other and helping each other through these like little minor crises that are all, you know, important and relevant to our lives. And also along the way discovering that, you know, it was you all along, which is nice. That is the promise of friends to lovers. It was you all along. And I guess that's lovely for some people. It is lovely this book.
And a lot of people actually who love friends to lovers point out that the stakes are kind of higher than ever, because if you lose your their friendship, you lose your friend, which is heartbreaking. And so I think that's kind of an interesting and in a weird way, like when people kind of framed it that way for me, I was like, oh, maybe I am more interested in that but I feel like often in friends to lovers books, there isn't that fear, or it isn't play out the same way. Do you have one you're gonna talk about to the
point
class?
Of order? No, I want to object. See, this is it. Not for Sarah.
Okay,
because I agree intellectually that is the conflict, right?
Like, yes,
if we do this and it fails, things are weird, and we aren't friends anymore, right?
Yeah.
However, it is very rare that conflict is articulated from the beginning. of these books.
I agree. Like, I agree.
Like, it happened. It's third act conflict that sort of pops up because suddenly, like, oh shit, there's a third act breakup here. And or like a climactic scene, right? A test of the relationship. And often that test of the relationship is in some way like them separating from each other and realizing that they've lost their friendship too.
Yeah.
But like, right. Is that really the conflict for the whole book? Like maybe in your head as a reader, but like, is it on the page as the conflict?
I know. In the whole book? I agree. Well, and what I find is the two books that I would say like work for me are the same like kind of setup. Okay. And one is, of course, Scoring Off the Field by Naima, right? Because what happens is,
well, that's a lot of conflict. It's unrequited.
Yeah.
Love. That's different.
But that's it. It's like, I mean, but I think it's like a subset, right? Like, because basically she's like, look, I am in love with him. He has no idea, but it is hurting me to be with him and knowing I could never be with this person. So I have to leave to save myself. Like the hurt of being in love with my friend is too great. And then he's like, wait, what the fuck's happening? And then he comes online and realizes, wait, maybe my feelings are bigger. And the other book is the exact same setup, except it's the opposite, which is in Jeannie Chin's The House on Mulberry Street. They are roommates and he has been in love with her forever. And at the end of one of like the previous books, because it's the third book in the series, she like applies for all these art scholarships and is going to leave. And he realizes like she would have no problem moving on and leaving me behind. And that breaks his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I have to do something different. So he basically goes and buys a house and tells her like they're not going to be roommates anymore. And she had no idea. Like, and it's really fascinating. So those are the ones that work for me, which is basically Unrequited. We're best friends and I'm in love with you and you have no fucking idea.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So again, it's not really quite the same as like I think what people like when they want friends to lovers.
Yeah. I think that if people like friends to lovers, I think the friends to lovers book that I think is like the purest distillation of how friends to lover, of like what people love about friends to lovers. Although I do think that Like Lovers Do book does that job. It is full of external conflict. Yeah. I think Josh and Hazel's Guide to Not Dating, which I mentioned at Fate of Mates
You'd
Live.
You said that night, yeah.
Without, you know, and I was very clear. I was like, this is not me sucking up to Lauren. But like, I think, I think Friends to Lovers can work very well in the rom-com, like in the humor of it. This book is Hazel and Josh have known each other since college. They have not been great friends since college. He is very buttoned up and like serious. He has a very like clear view of like the path of his life. She is pure chaos. She is friends with his sister. They've known each other for years and years. She has like been around him for years and years because she is such close friends with his sister and his family. And then they kind of like come back together. There's like a ex-girlfriend does him a little dirty. I mean, it's Christine and Lauren. So like, it's not like super dirty, but like it's, you know, does him a little bit dirty. It's not going to work out. And like, he's really kind of at sea because he really had a plan. Like, this is a man with a plan and the ex-girlfriend was part of this plan. And so he decides he's going to get to dating. Hazel is also decided like simultaneously that she is going to get to dating. It's a very classic rom-com in the sense that they have simultaneous bad dates with other people that always kind of like bring them back together after every date. And they become extremely good friends over the course of the book and then lovers. It feels like what Christine and Lauren do is they give you the kind of whole runway of the relationship. Like they don't start out enemies.
Yes.
They start out like neutral, become really good friends and then become lovers. And it feels like you're reading a real journey, which is the whole point. Like, that's what I want. I want the journey. So I think those the two books that I mentioned, like, I think Tracy's book really uses so much external conflict to, like, push the relationship into lovers. And I think what Christine and Lauren are doing are using, like, a lot of just, like, internal character building, like, stuff. Like, these are two really lovable, like, finely tuned characters who are right for each other. And that's charming. So those are the two books that I kind of think of. My other favorite Friends to Lovers book is Mary Bailo's A Matter of Class. But again, that's a book where, like, everything about the book suggests that you are not reading a Friends to Lovers book.
Right.
And then, boom, you are. And it's...
Yeah.
So it's a difficult trope for me because I get very bored very easily with decent people.
So if you like the Josh and Hazel, like, arc to our listeners, then I think one that would kind of is very similar is called Duke Actually by Jenny Holiday, which is they essentially their best friends get together. And so they become friends. And most of the book is them, like, becoming friends. And then at the end, it turns into something else, right? So you get that whole, like, kind of friendship arc. So that's for people that, like, that's if the Josh and Hazel kind of archetype is interesting to you, that's one you might like. This week's episode of Fated Mates is brought to you by Adriana Herrera, author of Bootlegger's Bounty.
So anybody who loves Adriana's erotic romance knows that this is fire.
She brings the novella. Heat.
Oh my God. It was originally released as part of the Villain I'd Like to F anthology, but now she's re-releasing it. It's extended. It has additional scenes. And it's just as good the second time around, I have to say. So it's historical, and our heroine, Rosalia, is desperate to get off her island in the Caribbean and get to New York City, where she has dreams of becoming a nightclub singer.
Perfect.
Unfortunately, she has this terrible father who absolutely won't stand for it, and so she has no choice but to get in bed, metaphorically and literally, with two outrageously sexy men. Cam, who is the bootlegger of the title, and Rum Runner, and Enzo, who is a gangster. And the two of them agree to take Rosalia by ship from the island to New York City.
What are they going to do on that long journey, Sarah?
What do they do to pass the time? Here's the thing. Cam and Enzo are sort of like into each other to begin with. This book is perfect for anybody who's looking for just, like, poly erotic romance. But also, Jen, there's a ton of voyeurism in this book. There's this, like, very sexy moment where Enzo can, like, hear them. You know, I love books where you can hear, like, where characters can hear each other through the walls. Perfect. And listen, this is for anybody who loves praise kink, anybody who loves, like, just a little bit of, like, a rougher taste of sex, and also, like, a historical that's in an unusual setting on a boat.
And Adriana always delivers a great read. So you can find Bootlegger's Bounty with your monthly subscription to Kindle Unlimited. Thanks to Adriana for sponsoring this week's episode. And if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title right now to be taken to buy the book. The other one I talked about that night was Secret Baby, which is funny because I would say it's not like a I hate it kind of thing. The joke I always make is, like, I think having a baby is hard. I'm not going to keep that a secret from anybody. Like, I just feel like it's a very hard to, and especially because I think another part of Secret Baby, I mean, I'll be really honest, is I'm, like, very pro-abortion. And so I'm always really like, wait, you don't have to have this baby. And that's how I used to feel. Now I feel, well, in half the states in this country, you do have to have this baby, and there's nothing romantic about that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, like, I think my complicated feelings about secret baby have become more complicated post-ops, right? So a big reason is just, like, and in order to make secret baby work, almost always, the pregnant woman, is kind of usually in some sort of dire straits, right? So it's kind of like, wait, you're now bringing a baby into, like, a house. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have money, you don't have a place to live, like, whatever, right? Because if you do have money and security and safety, then why aren't you telling this man? I mean, like, so there's, like, a lot of ways in which, like, the whole setup of secret baby just requires things that make me as a person very uncomfortable, right? Like, I don't want to read about women in dire straits then having to have a baby, right? Like, that, or be on their own, like, right? Having a baby is so hard, and doing it without a community is so hard. And so, you know, it's just like, there's, like, a lot of, like, very personal reasons, like, this often doesn't work for me. And then, like I said, post-ops, I'm just angry. Like, I'm furious. Why were you playing fast and loose with your birth control? Like, right? Like, you couldn't have an abortion. You're in Florida, for God's sakes. And, you know, that makes me furious. So I think there's a way in which, like, secret baby. Also, you know, when you have a baby, it's not like anything's real sexy for a long time. Just like all of the ways in which, like, I love my child, but, like, having a baby is just quite a thing. Bless. Little romance. I love you. But so it takes a lot for me to, like, really, like, push past into a place where I can be like, okay, I get it. And I have one, I think, which is a book by M. O'Keefe, who's Molly O'Keefe. This is, like, her more, like, sexy name, called Baby Come Back. I could not come up with it the night of the show, of course. And the thing about this book is it's the second book in essentially, like, a series. Not a series. There's, like, two, or there's, like, some other books. And in the first book, there is a woman who she has a sister, right? And, like, the sister is sort of fly by night, and it's, you know, there's, like, kind of struggle and strife between her and the sister. And in the first book, as they are falling in love, you can tell, or she can tell, that, like, something is going on with her sister, but what, right? And what you do is you find out what happens in the second book, because it's Baby Come Back is the sister's book, and the sister's name is Abby. I don't remember the other woman's name. And she, in the first book, there was, like, some underground fight club, sure. And in this book, Abby is essentially, like, has an affair with, like, one of the kind of bouncers, this guy named Jack, who, like, kind of was working the fight club. And what happens is they agree to just have, like, a fling, and she finds out, or becomes convinced, that he is actually way more than just a bouncer, that he's, like, a killer. And she is so freaked out that he might be a danger to her. Now, of course, it turns out, like, she completely misreads this. And I made a really funny joke the night of Faded Mace Live, which was like, you could tell this is the before times, because now it would just be dark romance and it wouldn't be a problem. Right. But this was 2017, when if you thought your man was a gangster and a killer, you would run away. Mm-hmm. And so Abby goes on the run. Like, she basically asks her sister for money and is like, I have to get out of here. And then she finds out she's pregnant, and she's like, I cannot go back to this man and tell him.
Yeah.
Right. And that is, I think, like, the one. Oh, Bad Neighbor is the first book. Sorry. And so and it begins. The thing that's really interesting is I think there's a book that, like, she plays around with time. Like, there's a big time jump. It, like, sort of begins in the past and then kind of fast forwards, and you kind of, like, then find out what happened. And so there's a lot of ways in which, like, Molly, the author, like, kind of, I don't know, folds the book up in a way that it really worked for me. Mm-hmm. And Abby's fear felt, like, realistic. And so, and then, like, the way it's resolved also felt realistic. And, you know, so the whole setup essentially, like, threaded a very specific needle where I kind of believed that it would all work out the way it did. So,
yeah,
that's it.
Secret Baby. It's not my favorite either. It's interesting because I do have, one like very specific Secret Baby book from when I was a child that Sandra Brown wrote that is, it's a real problematic one that I often think about because I'm like, oh, it's so good. Like it scratched an itch. Like it was just the perfect Secret Baby setup where like he basically like breaks into talk about would be dark romance. He escapes from prison, breaks into her house, like kidnaps her, like they fall in love on the road, on the run. He gets captured, sent back to prison. He comes back out of prison 9 months or whatever, 11 months later, goes immediately to her house, and there's a baby. And it's insane. I'm not going to actually even give the name of this book because it is so problematic on like another whole level, but like whatever. Anyway, so I think like when I think about Secret Baby books, often I think about those old school like romances where Secret Baby was, it felt like it was important. I often, when I talk about Secret Baby, talk about, you know, because people ask all the time, like, what it's one of those tropes that, like, people outside of romance are aware of. And they're like,
yeah,
I'll never forget being in a Barnes & Noble with Eric and him picking up, like, off a spinner, a Harlequin. And it had one, you know, like, the old Harlequins would have, like, the stamps on them. Like, it was a type of
Secret Baby.
A Harlequin presents. But it was a baby on board romance. And he was like, what? You know,
it's
like
happening.
Or like the Greek billionaire's secret baby or like whatever would be, you know, or like the Italian billionaire's pregnant secret mistress or like whatever. Yeah. Like, and so like Secret Baby is a thing that people make fun of from outside of the genre. It's tough to defend inside the genre, but one of the things that I have come back to again and again and again about it, and it feels really bleak to me, is in one of the cornerstones of a Secret Baby trope is what I just explained from the Sandra Brown book, where he has to return for her, not for the baby, right? And because it has to feel like she's been chosen. And I think that that is sad in a lot of ways. I think the kink of the classic Secret Baby for a lot of readers, and I don't want to paint with a super broad brush, but I do think for a lot of readers, the kink is my husband, partner, man chose me because of me, not because of child. And the corollary to that is my husband, partner, man chooses me with child, is happy, like exponentially happy that a child exists and our life is better for having this child. Our love is better for having this child. I think what's sad about that for me is that in a lot of kids, like, as you just said, like having a baby is a real test of relationship. It is not a guarantee. We all can name women who've had children, partners who have had children because they think that it will save something rather than test it further.
Be completely destabilizing in every way.
So all of that aside, like that, because that it's sort of like coded, it's wrapped up in like happiness and choice and not being miserable with a partner, right? I think there's something really interesting about that, but it also makes it very hard for me to like read these books and appreciate them on like a purely like id level. That said, Nobody's Baby But Mine will continue. I will forever be a banger. And I think part of the reason why it works for me, we did a deep dive of it in season 2. If you haven't read it, it's a Susan Elizabeth Phillips book. It is on my list of the top 10 romance novels of all time. We should do that as an episode sometime. But like without question, it would be one of the first ones that I write down on the list before I sort the list. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And it is a Secret Baby romance, though I think the reason why I love it so much is because it is an overt, like, she literally sets out to have a secret baby.
Yeah.
And it is pretty fucking great. And I think part of the reason why it works for me is because, like I was saying with all the other book, the other topics that we've been talking about, is I really like it when a book is trying to do something in an interesting way. And I think the idea that, like, this baby is not accidental, I'm air quoting that, like, this is a baby.
It's purposeful. Yeah.
Who was chosen. And, like, pregnancy was the choice here, eliminates a lot of the, like,
Yeah. I think the thing that's also interesting about that book, and we probably said this years ago, but I think it's even more true now, mm-hmm. is here is a book where a character makes some truly terrible decisions. She is doing the wrong thing. And there is no sense ever that we as the reader or that the author approves of these choices.
Correct.
Right? And I think that if you're kind of like, I don't, and it, for that alone, I think that it is a really fascinating book, especially now when people really struggle with, you know, how do I read this book where
mm-hmm.
I just want, I don't know how to engage with people who aren't perfect or good or doing good things or whatever, right?
Yes.
Always trying their best.
Yes. I would also, if you like a mafia book and you're looking, like, I think Secret Baby really, like, works really, can work really well when there's, like, a intense power situation going on.
Sure.
I mean, Lies You Tell babies. By LaQuette is that version of it, where the heroine is pregnant by the hero, and discovers while she's pregnant, it's a little bit True Lies-y. She discovers that he is a mob boss, and she thinks that he is cheating on her, and she happens to almost die like in this kind of like mix. And so she fakes her own death while pregnant and disappears.
Woo.
And then he finds her 5 years later. You That's know, intense. The best scenes in these movies, in these books, are the moments where the fathers find
yeah,
the mothers.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in the Molly O'Keefe one, he's searching for her. He doesn't know she's pregnant. I like, and the yeah, two books,
comes
a lot
for
of the two
her
books
before
is,
he knows yeah. the baby exists. LaQuette, too. Well, no, LaQuette, he knows she's pregnant, but he, yeah, no,
he wants
not
her.
The same.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, I mean, I just think Secret Baby is complicated by the world we live in. And I think it's interesting. I think the other thing that's just really interesting to me is at one point, I'm sure I said this, I had a friend who worked at a library, and at the end of every year, they would just like decommission the entire year's worth of like Harlequin Desires. Like, right, like we're just mm-hmm. moving them out because a whole new set will come in. And she gave me a whole bag, and it was like seeing just how much pregnancy was in these books mm-hmm. was very, I was like, oh, this is not something that happened back in the day. And it's hard not to sometimes feel like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. it felt something. I felt something.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what I felt. Yeah.
But listen, like, breeding kink exists. We did a whole episode
sure,
about
course.
It. It's our most popular episode of the year.
Sure.
Perfs.
I mean, and that's a part that's, like, also,
it's
right?
It's all
like,
wrapped it's, up. It's all weird. And kink sure. is, kink gets complicated.
Yeah. Okay. Is that, do we want to do more?
I mean, we could do spies, yeah. but I don't.
Oh, we could do spies.
Everyone knows I hate a spy romance. And here's what's yeah. interesting. Somebody, I think it was you, somebody like tweeted at me about some, or like messaged me about some like spy content, like a mm-hmm. show about
oh,
spies.
Oh yeah, it was
or,
me.
Like a movie about spies.
It was a book about like women in the CIA.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was at Strand.
Which I'm like a sucker for. I actually really love spies in media. I love spies in general. I love like the whole espionage thing. I do not like it mucking up my romance novels. That's the thing. I don't like it when like we're trying to like defend the queen from assassination and also like on the side I'm falling in love. Like I just, it's too much. Just write a book about defending the queen from assassination. I will also read that. So I have talked.
It takes up too much real estate in the romance.
It's too much.
Yeah.
I have always said that I really love the Pink Carnation series by Lauren Willig. I think it is extremely funny. It is like, if you are looking for humor in the writing of your historicals, like Lauren does that better than a lot of people. It is retelling, like the whole series is basically like a retelling or like an homage to the Scarlet Pimpernel, where like there are just, they are all like dandy spies all along the way. The first one is called The Secret History of the Pink Carnation. There are terrific books along the way. It's about 10 books long. Somebody came up to me at Fatemates Live and was like, I know you don't like spies, but have you read, you must do a deep dive on Joanna Bourne's
The Spy Master's Lady.
Right? And here is the part where I will tell you, no one tell Joanna, because I actually love her and I think she's incredible as a person. I have tried that book multiple times and it just isn't for me. Like, it, I can see why people fucking love it. It's just not for Sarah. And and I just want, like, so if you are interested in spies in your romance novels, like, that is considered to be the gold standard of spy books.
Yeah.
And you should go read it right now because Joanna Bourne is incredibly skilled and I can tell that it is great. It is just not for me.
Not for you. I would like to recommend actually Lenora Bell in the spy realm. She has a really cute series. I mean, and that's why
these are light touch spy books.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they work, which is the School for Duke series. And my favorite is One Fine Duke, which has probably like, I always forget how much I love this cover. They're like literally laying in a field of daisies and it is gorgeous. Like somebody the other day was like, what's a romance cover you think is so gorgeous you'd like put it on a poster on your wall? And I always am like, I don't know. And then I'm like, oh, One Fine Duke. And in this book, Mina is has been raised essentially by her uncle, who's like the spy master for England. And she has all of these, I think this is the one, and she has all these like spy stuff that she knows because she's been raised by a spy, but she's never been able to like implement it. And so she like, you know, they do all sorts of spy stuff and it's great. And I really, really loved it because she's like, I don't need, you know, my uncle's overprotective. And if I was a man, I would be a spy myself. But because I'm not, I've been sidelined, but look at my skills. And I love that all the time, too. So that whole series is great. But One Fine Duke is
nice.
A plus. Yeah, I think
that's good.
There you go.
Listen, we have said many, 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 many times on this podcast that in the hands of a great writer, anything can work. And I believe that in my soul. I think that anybody who's listened for a long time knows that I love a book that takes a swing. So even if it doesn't like quite make it a home run, I love a book that takes a swing. And I really admire authors who do it. But if there are great books about literally everything.
Of course. Of course. Well, and that's why, like, there's always an exception to the romance rule because there's always somebody out there doing it just the way you need it done.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, this is Fatemates. I'm Sarah McLean. I'm here with my friend Jen Prokop. You can find us online at fatemates.net, where you can read the show notes at our newly designed website.
Oh, yeah. It looks great.
It really does. Doing the job over there. You can find us on Twitter at Fatemates, on Instagram at FatematesPod, on Threads and Blue Sky and all the other places. On Eric runs a Tumblr for us. I don't know what even goes on over there. If you love talking about romance and you want to learn more about what happened in Fatemates Live, you can join the Patreon at fatemates.net/Patreon. Also at Patreon, becoming a member of the Patreon gets you access to the Discord where literally thousands of people are talking about romance every day.
All day long.
All day long. They will find, they will tell you exactly what to read if you have a unique niche that you would like to really understand and read more about. We want to thank Lauren. We want to thank Lauren Billings for being with us at Fatemates Live. It was awesome to have Lauren with us. She flew in for the night, and it was a real gift and a real treat. And also, we should say, Lauren Billings hit her 5-time award status. Not this time. We had missed the count, but she's now a 5-timer, and she has a paperweight to prove it. So look at that.
Amazing. All right. Thanks, everybody. Tell us your favorite exceptions to your rules. We want to hear all about them.